So how did you end up working out in this area?
Well, it started about 10 years ago when Montrose County got a hold of the Colorado Geological Survey, which is where I was working at the time. They wanted geologic hazard maps of the county. We pointed out to them that the geology hadn't been mapped yet. And so without knowing the geology, you can't really figure out the hazards. And so they were very gracious and said, you know, we'll support a mapping program to look at the geology in the Uncompahgre Valley. That's where we started back in 2006. When I did this work out here, the 10 years worth of mapping work, I was working for the Colorado Geological Survey, and I was the head of their geologic mapping program for the entire state of Colorado. So each year we would go out to different places in the state and map anywhere from 4 to 8 different quadrangles, different map areas in the state itself. And it's driven a lot by need. Say after a wildfire, there's a need for mapping in the area to figure out geologic hazards. In other places, there are compelling reasons like landslides or some kind of land use like agriculture or mining. There are different reasons in each place why you would go out and make a geologic map. But we wanted to do these maps to produce a publicly available resource that anybody could have in their hand if they wanted to have it.
I guess could you talk more about the difference there? Because in my mind, whether or not the rock underneath the soil is slate or granite doesn't seem to make too much of a difference. What's the danger? What's the usefulness of knowing that?
Well, in one arena, I would call it engineering geology. Different types of geology, whether they're soil or bedrock at the surface, they all have different characteristics to them. And those characteristics could matter a lot when you're building something like a road or whether you're trying to avoid hazard areas. In the Paonia area, just as an example, the town is built on very fine-grained alluvial fans. Now we know that. We didn't know that before we went in to do the mapping. And
alluvial fans, kind of sheets of sediment on top of each other?
Sheets of sediment formed by flooding at one point.
Huh.
So the floods brought out fine-grained deposits from the mountains, and this would have been the Manco Shale that was eroding away, and it deposited them really around the valley of Minnesota Creek, where it comes into the North Fork. And these types of deposits have a characteristic to them that leads the soils to want to collapse. And so one of the things you see as you go around the Paonia area and look at the houses and the businesses is you see a corner of the house kind of sinking into the ground. Or you might see bricks making a characteristic Z pattern on the side. And that Z pattern marks where part of the building is settled relative to the other part of the building. A map like this can delineate where you might expect those types of hazards. Or another example might be landslides. Landslides are something that's moved in the past. Whether it's going to move in the future has a lot to do with things like water or whether you cut into the slope. And just knowing that an older landslide is there can actually help you a lot with just anticipating what the problems might be if you built on them, or actually if you want to build there in the first place.
A little bit of predicting the future of what's going to happen pretty much based on what you know.
Yes, and so that's one of the beauties of a geologic map like this is once you characterize what these different units are on the map, like landslides, for instance, or alluvial fan deposits, or the Manco Shale even, the different parts of the Manco Shale. Once you get an idea of the characteristics of these different geologic units and where they're located on the map, you can start anticipating what the conditions might be or what you might do to just have a successful project on it. One example I could think of in the North Fork area that would be very interesting to take a look at would be our wineries out here. If you go and look at where the vineyards are located in the North Fork, they occupy different geologic units. Some of them occupy river gravels. Some of them occupy ancient fans that have come out of Grand Mesa. And there's one to the south of us that actually occupies a muddy fan that comes out of the Mount Lambourne area. These units, geologic units, all have different characteristics as far as the way that water infiltrates through them, the types of minerals and nutrients that might be there in the soil. So there are a lot of different interesting aspects about the geology and how they come together with other types of land uses like agriculture. And even in early Colorado agriculture, I know that we've got examples, not from Paonia particularly, but a little farther to the west, where the early orchards were planted in what we call lust deposits. It's windblown silt from the glacial ages. And when these orchards were planted and then they ran water into them, the soil started collapsing. And so there are actually old photos of young baby trees that have been planted straight up that once water hit them, they started sinking into the ground and they all toppled. Well, that would be a good thing to know if you're going to put in an orchard somewhere.
That would. That's remarkable. Silt blown in during the glacial age?
Yes. So if you have ever been up into a glacial area up in the mountains, have you ever seen those very light blue lakes that are up there?
Yeah, crystal clear.
Yeah, but on some of these, they're actually not crystal clear. They're almost opaque, and they're a kind of Caribbean green color, and you can't see into them very well. And it's because the glacier grinds up rocks so finely, it's almost like a flour, and it doesn't sink very easily into the lake either. That's the type of material that comes out of glaciers sometimes and gets spread over the top of, say, a floodplain. And then when the winds come along, and you've got to remember during the glacial ages that there wasn't much vegetation around to hold the soil in. It was so cold and there was permafrost around and, you know, very cold conditions. That silt can easily be picked up by the really strong winds that are coming off of Canada at that time. You know, even today we get a minor version of it. Have you ever seen the windstorms that come into Colorado that are blowing the dust in from Utah?
Right.
And
then
the dust gets on the snow and the snow melts early and it makes the snow red on the top. That's
exactly
Windblown dust right there. But during the glacial period, take that and maybe amp up the magnitude by 100 times or something. It was a really dusty time. And we do see some deposits like that around in the North Fork. It makes really great agriculture land as long as the trees aren't disappearing into the ground.
As long as that minor detail doesn't happen, then it's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, well, that.
So you gave a presentation at the Paonia Library, and you have upcoming presentations in Crawford and Hotchkiss, is that right?
Yes. So I spoke in Paonia 2 weeks ago. It shattered the record for attendance in the library. They had to turn people away, and people were out in the entry room, too, trying to listen. We are following up soon, though, next week. On May 10th, I'll be talking at the Hotchkiss Library. And on Thursday the 12th, I'll be speaking at the Crawford Library.
What are you talking about during these presentations?
Well, let me tell you, I've sat through a bunch of boring geology lectures before, and there's some kind of trick to really making geology not interesting. I don't subscribe to that, and when I go out and take a look at the geology around here, I think it's so interesting and fun and just amazing and remarkable. What I try to impart on people is that the landscape that we see around us and this landscape that we really love, you know, it's so beautiful around here and it's not a boring landscape. There are so many different pieces and facets. Think about the river valley here in Paonia and then all the various mesas around us and finally the West Elk Mountains up above. Grand Mesa up to the north, Gunnison Uplift or, you know, the Black Canyon down to the south of us. Those all have geologic reasons why we're there. And so I break my talk into two parts. The first, I talk about everything that we could see just on the skyline as we look around the entire landscape. And I try to give a little bit of a geologic framework to just what's happening here. There's actually kind of a reason for all this mad landscape that we have. And then I'm really here to highlight these maps that we've made for the last 10 years. And so, say, in the Paeonia talk, I'm really concentrating on the Paeonia Quadrangle, or the very local area. And hopefully they walk away with a better general sense of what's around, but also their curiosity is piqued by some of the really, really stellar, cool pieces of geology that we have around here.
You've talked about the cool geology, the mad geology. Going back to high school geology in my mind, the idea of landscape in these mountains are formed by the upthrust of the crust. That's our mountains, rain and water. You get your streams and erosion. Is there more going on here?
Well, there is, and there are a lot of different stories out there about how different things happened. And for instance, you could look at Mount Lambourne, Land's End Peak, and say, these look just like volcanoes up above us. And then all these boulders over here on Pitkin Mesa, well, maybe those boulders were thrown into the air by the volcano that built Mount Lambourne. And so there's a story right there. But as we go closer and we actually look at what those boulders on Pitkin Mesa are made of, they aren't made out of the same thing as Mount Lambourne is at all. And so we can take a look at these and go, where do we think these are coming from? And again, geologists have looked at parts of this over the ages. So I'm standing on the shoulders of other people who have done this before. But as far as figuring out how it all fits together or what these features are or how they got there, I think that's one of the lessons that comes into these geologic maps. And it comes into the interpretation of just what do I call a unit? For example, on the site of Mount Lambourne, there are these beautiful, beautiful rock glaciers that are up there.
Rock glaciers?
A rock glacier is, it's really just like a glacier. It's a body of ice, but there's so much rock that's fallen into the glacier that it's really just a bunch of rubble cemented by ice, and it moves down the hill. And inexorably, it's very slow movements. But some of the rock glaciers on the side of Lambourne and Land's End are up to about 3 miles long. They've moved away from the side of the peaks and just flowed into the valleys away. They're some of the lowest elevation rock glaciers in the entire state.
Hmm.
They probably aren't active anymore, but the snow that falls onto the rock glaciers is actually a potential source of water, and one of Paeonia's municipal springs actually comes out of the bottom of a rock glacier. So, hey, Paeonia, you know, you may not know it, but you're drinking some glacial water.
Wow. And how old is that water then, that ice that's in that rock glacier?
Well, the last glacial period ended about 12,000 years ago. So it can come back to that, but several of these rock glaciers, the ice has persisted through time, through something that we call the Little Ice Age, and it's been slow to melt away. I think that these glaciers, rock glaciers, haven't been moving for a while because they've got standing forests on them. And so the last movement kind of predates those trees being able to grow on the glaciers. But nevertheless, they're fascinating features. And if you look at them from up above, you can see these incredible swirling patterns from where they flowed down the hill and were actually segregating themselves into big boulders and little boulders as they moved. They're really just tremendous.
That's wild. After your presentation or talking with people around town about this, what has been the reaction from residents, from the people that live on these formations?
I've had people walk up to me on the street, and of course I couldn't see everybody in the room. I couldn't remember who all was there, but more than one person has come up to me and said, you know, I will never look at this valley the same again. After what I learned at this lecture, I look around and I see the whole landscape in a new light.
I imagine for a presenter like yourself, that isn't a higher compliment.
Well, I was very tickled by it, to tell you the truth. But, you know, I when we're actually in the lectures and the crowd's reacting to everything, and I show all these remarkable pictures of what we have in our midst and come up with an explanation, you really see the light bulbs going off above people's heads. People are seeing it, and geology is such a visual science, you know. And sometimes, even if you've walked past something time and time again, just having a different way of looking at it or an explanation of how that feature might have gotten there really does cause you to look at it in a very different way.
Looking at this map, could you walk me through what story you see with your geologist's eyes looking at this map?
I'd be happy to.
Of the area. Okay, one second. So there's wide swatches of pinks and blues and yellow and green, and there also seems to be almost kind of a flow to some of these colorful tendrils. What do you see?
Well, when I look at the land, when I'm out doing my geology, and when I look at the map that results from it, I see a story of how different types of rocks came to be here. And each of the rocks has its own story in geologic history. Looking at a map like Paeonia, which we have right here in front of us, the Paeonia area is dominated by Land's End Peak and Mount Lambourne.
Right.
Those show up as these pink egg-looking shapes here. The pink refers to what age it is and also that it's igneous rock. And those were features that were in place about 32 million years ago. And they were down beneath the ground when they were formed. They weren't volcanoes on top of the ground. They were an underground magma chamber, which is hardened into very hard crystalline rock. And that's why they're still here, is that they haven't eroded away. But everything around those peaks, all the way down to Paeonia, is part of an erosional belt, or all of the landscape around those peaks is wearing away much quicker than those mountains does. So if you kind of get a feel for the map, you see that there are belts of different types of sediments. A little farther down and away are some older gravel deposits from when the land used to be up at that altitude. They're a product of earlier erosion back in geologic time, say around 350,000 years ago to 600,000 years ago. Outboard of those is a whole belt of landslides that have formed on the Manco Shale. And the Manco Shale just fades away from the sides of the mountains. And there are just huge, huge belts of landslides around those mountains. At the toes of the landslides are then muddy debris flow fans. They're mud flows that flow away whenever the landslide moves. It may send sheets of sediment and water out into the valleys and fill up the valleys. And I've been able to map, I think, five different levels or five different time periods of those types of deposits. And those form things that we see today as Lambourne Mesa, Bone Mesa, pieces of land that we're familiar with like that. But these are all tied so closely into big failures off the mountainside. So imagine the excitement of a huge landslide fails on the side of Mount Lambourne, fails down the side into the valley, and all the mud and water and sediment shoots out the bottom into a valley and goes for miles down the valley. And then time passes. Those valley parts get bypassed by the stream as it's cutting through. The stream often just cuts off to the side and forms a new course for itself. And what we're left with are these kind of high and dry mesas that then people irrigate and they use them for farmland. You know, they seem like mesas that are up above the modern streams. And while that may be true, at the time that they were formed, they were actually at stream level. And you got to remember that as erosion occurs through time here, the streams cut deeper and deeper and deeper. And the streams also leave a part of themselves a little bit higher on the landscape. So all of these mesas that we have around here are really tied to stream action during various glacial cycles, where the glaciers came, the glaciers went. When they melted, they sent huge amounts of water down many of these streams. And there was a lot of erosion with that. There was deposition of stream sediments. Oh, man, there was a lot of stuff that went on up here. And this is all kind of captured to some degree in the geologic map.
Yeah, I'm seeing over here in the cross section, you were talking earlier about how Lambourne and Land's End were igneous rocks and were formed under the Earth's surface, but from magma.
Yes.
And is that what this line is, an old magma chute that's in there somewhere, or?
Yes, and what do I call this? I call it a inferred conduit. So the magma has to come up from deeper in the earth somewhere. And in the case of these types of mountains, which are called laccoliths, it means an igneous body that formed at some intermediate position, but it's still underneath the earth. So the magma would come up some kind of pipe or chute or fracture, and it would come up to an area where all of a sudden it spread out into the sediments themselves, and everything that was up above it, the sedimentary rock pile, it had enough force to the magma coming up that it would start pushing all those sediments up over the top of them, and then they form their chambers underneath the ground. What we're looking at today is that many of those layers that went over the top of the mountain have been eroded away. They just don't exist anymore. And what we're seeing are the erosion products. And Mount Lambourne, the rocks up there are harder than all of the Manco shale sediments around. The shale wears away and forms the landslides on the side. And then the top, the crystalline igneous rock that we call porphyry, that makes up Mount Lambourne, it doesn't wear away very quickly. So it's fairly close to what was its original shape down underneath the ground when it was formed.
Wow. Porphyry.
Porphyry. So a porphyry has more feldspar in it than granite does. Granite has more quartz in it. So it's just a composition difference between the two. And then the porphyry that we have around here is a light gray rock. And then it's got small white dots in it. And if you look at those white dots, they're crystals of feldspar. And if you go down to the Western Slope Conservation Center's Paonia River Park today and go down to the water's edge, most of the rock that you see down there is this porphyry, the gray rock with the white crystals in it. And that came from Mount Lambourne, Land's End, and a number of these other high peaks in the West Elk Mountains that are all laccoliths.
I'm also noticing in your cross-section here, are one of these bands, is there coal on this map?
There's no coal on the Paonia map, and that's just a function of what's there and what's not there. There used to be coal over the entire map area, the Mesa Verde Formation, which is where the coal comes from around here. It used to extend over this whole area, but it's been eroded away. And the front of that erosion is just to the north of us, just to the north of Paonia. It's where you find the coal mine.
So this whole area used to be covered in coal, but has now eroded away. But the edge of that erosion is where you find the mines up by Somerset, up by the edge of Gunnison County.
That's exactly right.
And one of the things that always blows me away is the time scale, how inconceivable it is, really. Like that coal erosion, do you have, off the top of your head, an idea when that happened?
Well, we can guess. And really, our guess goes up to Grand Mesa, where we've got some lava flows up there. There are basalt flows up on top of Grand Mesa. And those have been dated by different methods, and the methods reveal an age of 10 million years old. Those basalts sit on top of river gravels. It's probably an ancient Colorado River that's up there. And if you know anything about big rivers here, they're the lowest point on the landscape. And so 10 million years ago, that was the lowest point issuing from western Colorado. So we know that in the last 10 million years, it was probably, you know, that area on Grand Mesa was probably surrounded by higher hills. We don't know how much higher, but everything's been eroded from there down to our present river levels.
10 million years is an inconceivable amount of time, but so is the amount of rock and land that's no longer here. And that all just, I guess, flow down the rivers and out into the ocean?
Yeah, everything that we have here has been removed down the rivers and taken, well, actually, I'm kind of curious about that myself. Where did all this sediment that's been removed from Colorado go to? It certainly predates the Grand Canyon. So did it go out to Utah? Did it make it down to the Gulf of California? What the heck happened to that sediment anyway? We don't have the answers for that in this map, but what we do have is just a beautiful example of where we are today.
Well, Dr. David Noh, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. My pleasure.